fourth case of the morning is number 02-3058, Anthony J. Militello against the Central States Areas Pension Fund. Well, good morning. While counsel is getting settled, if you'd like to leave your bag there, sir, while counsel is getting settled, I'd like to once again announce, because we have a change, I notice, in people in the courtroom, I'd like to reintroduce very briefly our guests again. We have with us today two judges from Japan who are visiting the United States for a year, observing the lawyers and judges in our court system, Judge Ono and Judge Ono. They are husband and wife and sit in the district courts in Japan. So we're very pleased to have them with us today. I know that some of you were not present when we introduced them at the beginning of the session. With that said, Mr. Cusack, you may take the podium and we'll begin with your case.
Your Honors, Mr. Lee, this is an appeal from an order affirming the denial or the suspension of pension benefits of Mr. Militello by the Central States Pension Fund. Mr. Militello worked for 31 years as a teamster, and when it became apparent to him that his health wouldn't permit him to work as a teamster anymore, he investigated the possibilities of retiring under the Teamsters Pension Plan, Central States Pension Fund. Mr. Militello owned several trucks, five or six, that were leased to a common carrier. And before he accepted a penny from the Central States Pension Fund, he was aware that the Central States Pension Fund had a rule that says you can't be reemployed and collect your pension. And according to their plan, reemployment means any work for which a petitioner, disabled petitioner, receives any form of compensation or is entitled for work performed. Work. So he writes them a letter in the process of the pension application and says, I was advised by the union that to receive my pension, I must seek your approval to, quote, actively own trucks and receive a pension. Right up front, I want to actively own trucks. And this is investigated. Several questions are asked, one of which is, can he own and not drive? What will the arrangements be? Will he hire the drivers? Or, disjunctively, will he lease the trucks? They received a letter from his employer, Alco, says, yes, he's leasing trucks to a trucking company. Not this trucking company, doesn't say, just says a trucking company. The pension is approved. He doesn't control the drivers. He can't control the drivers. Trucks are leased as a matter of federal regulation, federal law. When they're leased to a common carrier, the common carrier has the complete control over the use of those trucks.
What about buying gas? Wouldn't it be logical that the we leased the trucks to would buy the gas, and there wasn't there a $100,000 fuel charge in his tax return?
A, nobody ever asked him, did he buy gas? B, it's not a dry lease. It's a wet lease. He pays for expenses. It's not passive income. It is active ownership. There are expenses. If there had been a criteria, I submit that they would have asked, who pays the expenses? And what are the expenses? Right up front. But
so
there wasn't.
You have the same view of the $20,000 driver bonus?
The $20,000 driver bonus, they didn't ask if he paid a driver's bonus. They never asked. As a matter of fact, when we go all the way through the appellate process, nobody on the Board of Trustees says, until we get into the district court, but he paid for gas. But he paid a driver's bonus. And it isn't the trustees who say this. It's Albert Nelson, who's not a trustee. Albert Nelson goes back later when you get to court and he flies back and says, oh, there's a reason there. That must be it. You simply do not actively own and lease vehicles without expense. Otherwise, it would be a security. You have to have some expense. And they knew it because the conjunctive was, does he lease the trucks or did he hire the drivers? That was the criteria. But Albert Nelson, when he prepared the administrative record, he eliminates those notes out of it. They're not there. Maybe they thought I wouldn't go to the pension fund and go look at the file and see what they considered the first time around. Okay. So a year later, somebody says, he's running a non-union trucking company after he gets his pension. Non-union, that's the magic word. He's working for Alco, his former employer. They didn't ask Alco what he was doing. They send him a whole bunch of questions and demand his tax returns, which the regulations or the CFR says they shouldn't be doing, but they demand his tax returns. And they don't tell him that he's doing any work. They don't tell him that he's utilizing skills. They say this vague thing about skills, and it goes to their reemployment committee, who decides you must cease owning the trucks. The magic words is you will have to terminate your ownership of the trucks. It doesn't say he's driving the trucks. It doesn't say he's dispatching trucks. He's doing nothing but paying his taxes and taking legitimate expenses that are passed on to him by the carrier. He says you must terminate your ownership of the trucks. Now, the Central States plan has a three-step appeal process. First step, Benefits Claims Review Committee. Second step, Benefits Claims Appeal Committee. Third step, Benefits Board of Trustees. It's in the plan. It must be in the plan. It must be in the summary plan description as a matter of law. It is. What did they do in this case? They skipped the first step. A decision was made by this reemployment committee that doesn't keep any records to suspend his benefits. You must sell your trucks is what they're telling him. There's nothing in the plan, and they admit it, that says you can't own and lease trucks. So he's deprived of the first step in the review process. And when I call this to the district court's attention, Mr. Nelson, again, I feel like I'm fighting the Albert Nelson pension fund, says, ah, but this is the functional equivalent. That doesn't wash with the regulations that say you have three, you have to put it in the plan, in the summary plan description, and you have to put the appeal process up front to people. And not only that, it wasn't an appeal to the reemployment committee. They made the initial decision to suspend. Finally, without a lawyer, Mr. Militello answered all of their questions. Says, I don't drive the trucks, I don't have any day-to-day duties, da 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 da. And he writes in his final appeal to the trustees a complaint. He sends the original letter saying, I wanted to actively own trucks. And he attaches that to this letter being written for approval of my retirement after 31 years of service with the right to retain my equipment. This request being previously approved is now being denied. That is a claim that you are applying this plan provision in a non-uniform manner. They don't even address it. There's a couple of things they could have done. They could have said, well, we know new stuff now that you didn't tell us before. They didn't say that. Or they could say, this decision is inconsistent with all the other decisions. They didn't say that. They come on with, here's what the trustees say. Made a decision regarding your employment at any capacity because work in any capacity requiring the same skills as used is prohibited reemployment. You must sell your trucks. You will have to terminate your ownership. Now, I'm not sure exactly what skills he was supposed to have used. They don't name one skill anywhere throughout this thing. Not one. The cure is to terminate ownership. You don't have to have any skill to own anything. Now, if he's dispatching trucks, if he's assigning loads, if he's selling freight, if he's doing all of these other things, those are skills. But simply to collect the revenue and to pay the bills on it, that is not a skill. They haven't identified one skill. Now, to begin with, when we go to court, the district court applies the arbitrary and capricious standard of review to this decision by the trustees. Now, tradition among central states says we are arbitrary and we get the arbitrary and capricious standard of review. But since the Herzberger decision, it says which says that this unchanneled discretion to deny claims has to be in the plan document, I've challenged that. And I've challenged that because it isn't in the plan document. The only thing you've got is discretion to interpret the plan back in the trust agreement that isn't necessarily distributed to anybody other than the trustees. Now, in the Fritcher decision by this court earlier or late last year, a plan document was held to be, or a decision adopting what a plan document was, a formal plan document, which is one which the plan participant could read and determine his or her rights or obligations under the plan. The trust agreement is in evidence. It doesn't state any rights or obligations under the plan. And that's what, in the Fritcher decision, says is a plan document for the purpose of holding it against the participant. Now, they want to hold the trust agreement, language in the trust agreement, against the participant in this particular case, even though the trust agreement does not have any reference to rights or obligations of the participant. It says what the trustees must do and how they must operate it. The trustees' decision fails to mention any item on the tax returns. The denial letters fail to mention any items on the tax returns. But Albert Nelson, in his affidavit to which I object, does. He says these are the reasons for the trustee. Now, the trust agreement requires the trustees to keep their own minutes. I object. The district court says, that's okay. Al Nelson is the custodian of applications. Well, this isn't an application anymore. He's not the custodian of the... this isn't an application. The custodian of the trustee's minutes is the executive director, Mr. Cubalanza, somebody entirely different. But why have trustees' minutes if Mr. Nelson can come into court and articulate all kinds of reasons that weren't in the denial letter? You know, it has been prohibited for a long time in this circuit that new facts concerning the applicant's earnings cannot be articulated when the case is challenged in the district court. This is exactly what Mr. Nelson did. Nowhere in the trustee's decision does it reference earnings, expenses, anything like that. Just says some skill. And the way you stop exercising this skill is you sell the trust. And I still haven't seen the relationship to that. The district in the Wright versus Lattice Company says every reason for denial has to be in the denial letter. Doesn't say a word about this. Doesn't say a word in the denial letter about his tax returns. Doesn't say a word about him paying bonuses or having expenses. And they missed a step. They didn't give him a proper, but only when we get to court do they fly spec the entire file and say, aha, Mr. Nelson says this must be what the trustees looked at, even though the trustees don't even mention a word about it in their minutes or in the denial letter. Finally, the question is whether or not you can even suspend benefits for self-employment. I haven't seen a case that says you can. I haven't seen one. It's for work performed for an employer, service for an employer. And while Central States glibly says this doesn't apply to us because he's under 65 years of age, there's a corollary regulation that says the minute or a month after you stop in 2032B service for an employer, the benefit has to be resumed. If you could suspend it without regard to 2032B service under that regulation, you'd never have to reserve it. You have to read them in pari materia. It has to be service for an employer, not for yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Cusack. We'll hear now from Mr. Lee.
It please court. My name is Charles Lee, and I represent the Appalachian Central States Pension Fund and the Board of Trustees. This case is not about whether Central States suspended Mr. Nortel's benefits because he owned trucks or because he leased trucks to another company. This case is about whether the trustees acted reasonably in concluding that Mr. Nortel operated a trucking company. If we look at the administrative record that was presented to the Board of Trustees, we see that they did have a reasonable basis. I think Judge Williams alluded to this. First, we have a statement from a local union official saying that Mr. Nortel was operating a trucking company and that he was employing a truck driver. Second, we have tax returns from Mr. Nortel, which show that he described his principal business as trucking, not leasing. In the tax return, he lists $100,000 in fuel expenses and over $20,000 for a driver bonus. Now, if Mr. Militello was just merely leasing his trucks to another company, we would not expect these expenses to appear on his tax return. Now, Mr. Truzak suggests that these are normal expenses that you incur when you lease trucks to another company, and I don't think that's true. When you lease trucks to another company, one would assume that the lessee would be the one that has to pay for the fuel. And also, if the trucks are under the control of the lessee's employees, why would Mr. Militello be paying a $20,000 bonus to a driver? It simply just does not make sense, and that is what the trustees concluded. Now, Mr. Cusack alluded to the appeals process and how Mr. Militello's claim was handled here. And he mentioned that there was one level of appeal that was skipped pursuant to the pension plan. Now, admittedly, the appeals process that is set forth in the plan was not followed to the letter in this matter. However, rather than focusing on the technical requirements of the appeals process, I think it's more important to look at what the appeals process was set up to achieve. The purpose of the appeals process is to make sure that a participant's claim receives full and fair review. Now, to achieve this goal, the plan provides for a three-step appeals process. One, the first level is that it goes to a committee called the Benefits Claim Review Committee, something we call the BCRC. The second level is that it goes to the Benefits Claim Appeals Committee, something called the BCAC. Third, the participant can then appeal to the Board of Trustees. The pension fund has decided that in these complex perjury informant cases, the BCRC is simply not qualified to handle these issues. To ensure that participants receive a full and fair review, Central States has decided to use what we call a reemployment committee, which is made up of five trustees who are more qualified than the BCRC to determine these complex perjury employment issues. Does this follow the appeals process to the letter? No, it doesn't. However, by employing the reemployment committee, Central States achieves the more important goal of giving participants such as Mr. Motel a full and fair review of his claim in front of a body that is qualified to hear his claim. I suppose Central States could go through the formality and have the BCRC review the reemployment committee's decision. That way it complies with the letter of the plan. However, this would be a complete waste of time and simply remanding the case so that the BCRC can review this decision by the reemployment committee would achieve nothing.
Well, this reemployment committee is not discussed in the plan documents, is it?
It is not. But I think what is really important is, did Mr. Militello receive a full and fair review? He did. The reemployment committee considered his claim. He then was allowed to go through the BCAC, the second level of the appeals process. The BCAC looked at what the reemployment committee decided, considered Mr. Militello's claim, and decided, we agree with the reemployment committee. Mr. Militello then had the opportunity to go before the Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees considered his claim, considered the reemployment committee's decision and the BCAC, and determined that based on all the evidence, that it was reasonable for them to conclude that Mr. Militello was engaged and prohibited reemployment. Now, when this court considers whether it was reasonable for the Board of Trustees to conclude that that Mr. Militello engaged in prohibited employment, we would argue that the arbitrary and capricious standard applies.
Can we go back to that reemployment committee? Because the reemployment committee was made up of trustees. So essentially the same group reviewed later on down the road.
Well, the reemployment committee consists of five trustees. The full board consists of eight trustees.
Yeah. If it had been the proper committee, it would have been employees, right, rather than trustees.
Right. And what I've been told is that in these reemployment committee issues, what happens is that if they are simple issues, staff will decide whether it's something is prohibited reemployment or not. But because some of these cases are very complex, and because the trustees are more familiar with what is considered Teamster industry work, the more complex cases are referred to the reemployment committee. Going back to the arbitrary and capricious standard, Mr. Cusack argues that the Central States Trust Agreement is not a planned document, so that this court should not look to the provisions in the trust agreement in determining whether the arbitrary and capricious standard applies. And simply, there is no case law for that. This court has previously looked at our Central States Health and Welfare Fund Trust Agreement. Look to that, and I think the case was Exxon versus Central States. This court looked at the provisions in the trust agreement and concluded that the discretion afforded to the Board of Trustees under the trust agreement was sufficient to trigger deferential review, the arbitrary and capricious standard. The provisions in the Central States Pension Fund Trust Agreement are exactly the same as provisions contained in the Health and Welfare Trust Agreement. So there simply is no reason why this court should depart from the reasoning that was set forth in Exbaum versus Central States. Next, I'd like to address Mr. Cusack's argument about whether Central States can suspend Mr. Militello's benefits for engaging in self-employment instead of work, as he said, or service. And clearly, under the Central States Pension Plan, you can have your pension benefits suspended for being self-employed. And I'm just reading a portion of what that says. It says, this is defining prohibited reemployment, it says employment in any position, including a managerial or supervisory position, and including self-employment. Now, Mr. Cusack argues that under the regulations that self-employment is not service or work, and what we set up forth in our brief is that, fine, that might be too true. We don't concede that issue, but one has to look first at the first question when you have these kind of issues, and that is, was Mr. Militello reach the normal retirement age? If he didn't, then it really doesn't matter what the regulations say with respect to what the pension fund can suspend or not suspend for. And here, Mr. Militello, when he retired, was 53 years old. That means that the regulations don't apply here. Now, so then we look to the pension plan. What does the pension plan say about prohibited employment? And it says here, as I just read, that self-employment can be considered prohibited reemployment. That is what Mr. Militello was engaged in. In summary, there is sufficient evidence in the administrative record for this court to uphold the trustee's decision. The statements from the local union official, Mr. Militello's representations in his tax returns, which show that he was operating a trucking company. And Mr. Militello was given numerous opportunities to address this. How do you explain the statement from the local union official? How do you explain the representations in his tax return? He's never offered anything. He doesn't tell us what those things are for, other than what his counsel is saying is that, well, there were expenses associated with his leasing business. But that makes no sense. And we would specifically ask that this court uphold the trustee's decision and the district court's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Ms. Kizak, you have 2 minutes.
Your Honors, Mr. Militello was never apprised of or confronted with the statement by the local union official. This was kept secret from him. I didn't find it. That's why I went up to the pension fund. That's when I found it out, after the trustees made their decision. He was never asked to explain the fuel expenses or the driver's bonuses. No mention of the fuel expenses or the driver's bonus, which was actually a holdback that the carrier does for longevity and safety that's charged back to him. He was never asked to explain any of that. The trustees never mentioned a word about expenses, driver's bonuses. This stuff didn't come up until we get into the district court. That's prohibited. They can't argue with these things at this point in time. Every reason has to be stated, and if they say he's running a trucking company because he paid expenses on a wet lease, not a dry lease, they have to say that. Every reason under the Reich decision has to be in there. Now, 29 U.S.C. Section 1022 requires the plan to have stated what the appeals procedure is. It simply does not in this case. They use something alternative. They use the trustees instead of the other one. The final thing is the tax returns. What's interesting about the tax returns is they show no wages, no employment taxes, no ICC carrier fees, no franchise fees, no road use taxes. He ain't running a trucking company. He's leasing trucks and paying the expenses of putting those trucks on the road that are dictated by the carrier, which as a matter of law has complete control. That isn't work. That's my red light.
Thank you, Mr. Cusack.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, as well, and the case will be taken under advisement.